All right, here we go on a hot summer Sunday morning in Las Vegas. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here live in the Fox Sports RCG Home Loans studio every Sunday morning at 8 on Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM and 1340 AM. Flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights and sister station of Raiders Nation Radio and ESPN Radio Las Vegas. Also here, social media director Spencer the Wiz Ostrowski.
Nobody beats the Wiz.
And back in studio after a week off, producer and Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network's locker room reporter, Chris Magnum Chapman. And making a rare appearance, the guy I started this show with nearly 12 years ago when he was 14 years old, and it was called The Jake and Dad Show. My son, Jacob Feldman, will chime in as well today. We are also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live and Twitch. The page is called Out of Line. That's Outta Line. Follow the show on Instagram and X at Out of Line Fox LV. And since we are live, your calls and questions are welcome. The Fox Sports RCG Home Loan Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What's on Tap, brought to you by title sponsor RCG Home Loans. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, RCG Home Loans is the company to turn to for all of your home financing needs. Call 702-964-5720 to get information on all of the home financing options currently available in the state of Nevada. What's on tap? Golden Knights will be counting on in 2024. What will and who will they be counting on? Well, we'll let you know. The Summer Olympics have begun, and USA basketball tips off in a couple of hours. The MLB trading deadline is upon us, and some anticipated QB contract extensions have happened, are happening, and I think will happen. That's what's on tap if you are looking to buy a home or to refinance the home you currently own. Contact RCG Home Loans. Call 702-964-5720 for details on current home financing options in the state of Nevada. Let's get right into this thing in a minute. But first of all, Max, how was your trip, man?
Not long enough.
They never are.
No. We went up to Park City, and we spent about a week up there, and went into Wyoming, which is, I didn't realize how close Wyoming was to Salt Lake City. Only like an hour, a little more than an hour away from Salt Lake, and less than that from Park City. And I'll tell you, man, like it's I love it up there because it's just unspoiled, a lot of it. And, you know, it's away from a lot of people and, you know, me, the dogs, the family, and more importantly, the dogs. And yeah, it was a good time. Not long enough. We wanted to go to Yellowstone, but we just didn't have enough time. And probably a good thing because there was that, I don't know if you saw that. I know I first saw it from Ron Futrell. He shared it on his Facebook, the geyser or whatever it was that kind of exploded a little bit there. And
went a little out of control.
Yeah, yeah. It needs a forensic audit, I think. And, you know, that geyser moved the goalposts. But, you know, it was cool. Not long enough. I think next year we're going to drive up maybe up to like the Oregon coast and just go spend a week up there. And again, away from everybody and with the dogs. And, you know, although my best friend's already telling me we're going to Iceland next summer. So that's one place I have not been, despite the fact that my best friend is Icelandic and she's been my best friend for like 25 years. The fact that I've never been to her home country is kind of crazy, but yeah, it was a good time. It was a good time. And I heard Jess did a good job filling in. So
Jess did an amazing job filling in. I saw a lot of your stuff on Facebook. I saw that the dog got to go swimming. They looked
looked
like they had a tremendous time
up
there.
The nice thing is, the great thing is, the high in Park City was about 85 every day. Oh, and I was
beautiful.
Checking here and it's like 112. Yeah. And I'm like,
it's a beautiful
thing. Yeah, I think I'd rather be there. And fortunately, now it seems like it's cooled down a little bit here. Like, we went to the park this morning before the show, and it was about 75, 80 degrees, which is a big change from the 90s that it's been at 6, 7 in the morning. So hopefully, I think I read today is the first day this summer that we have had a temperature below normal. Like, this summer's just sucked. It's been atrocious.
Oh, it's brutal.
I'm done with it.
It's been brutal. I mean, I always say that, you know, there's something medicinal about the sunshine. And coming from Michigan where it's overcast, like, it feels like 80% of the time. I enjoy waking up and seeing the sun. It motivates you. It makes you want to get out of bed. But there's such a thing and this is a really strange analogy, but like I always say about the Detroit Lions, you know, with Dan Campbell, I love aggressiveness, but then there's aggressiveness to a fault. I love sunshine, but then there's sunshine to a fault. And that is Las Vegas. I mean, this past summer, it has been insane to the point where you go out to your car in the morning to go to work, and this has happened to me twice, where it's early. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning, a little bit before that.
And it's already too hot?
The steering wheel's too hot to touch. I've got to put the air on and let my steering wheel cool down.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's no way to live.
No, and even sometimes when you're driving, you know, you just get absolutely blinded by it. But hey, I'll take the sunshine over humidity, mosquitoes, and overcast any day of the week.
Yeah.
Just, it can ease up on the heat a little bit.
I am one of the people, and I might be in the minority here, but I think Las Vegas has some of the most overrated weather in the country. Like, it sucks. Like, our weather is not as good. Like, I lived in Phoenix for 2 years before I moved here. I'm talking about great weather. Yeah, the summer sucks. But from late September through late April, early May, it's like 65, 70 degrees every single day. And it's sunny. And you get spring training, which is great, if especially if you're a kid and you want autographs. And, you know, you go see Arizona State football. Or if you're living in Tucson, you go see Arizona Wildcats. And, you know, those few months of summer, they're awful, but I would take the 10 to 15 degrees warmer there in the winter than it is here, and it's not as windy in the winter.
Yeah, you know, I agree. The winter can be a little bit difficult because even though it's not cold like
it's
is maybe
windy.
In the middle.
It's always windy.
And it's still got its chill to us, but, you know, the heat of the summer here is if there's any state that I've ever been in that justifies owning a pool— this is a state you want to have a pool in. I mean, because otherwise you're going to spend a great deal of time indoors in the summertime. When you're supposed to be outside, you have to be inside to survive. But if you've got a pool, at least you can go outside, lay out, spend some time in the pool. Just, you know, sunscreen and water. And yet we're running out of water, supposedly. Well, Spence, first of all, before we go move on, also, Jake, welcome to the show. You went out last night, and you made it on time today. I didn't even write you in the show log because, I mean, you're in town visiting from Austin. You've got a lot of friends you visit. It's a Saturday night in Las Vegas. You're here up bright and early. You look chipper and even went out late last night.
You know, Dad, I when you gave me this opportunity to come on the radio, I felt like it was something that I won't get the opportunity to do very often. So I wanted to, you know, cherish this moment, and I'm grateful to be here. I feel good, and might not look as good as I feel, but I definitely am happy to be here.
Well, at least you're not like me. You didn't turn another year old, right? I mean, it gets to the point now, I'm like, my God, how many times am I going to turn 29 before I leave this planet? I just don't know. But
hopefully 29 more times at least.
I want to thank you for coming in town for that. And it wasn't really a surprise. I knew you were coming to town, but we had a great time, a good dinner the other night, and always a cool time. And I love reasons to get together with family, Mags. You know, it's fun when you get together with your kids and everyone, but I don't like it for my birthdays anymore. Any other holiday I'm good for, but it's gotten to the point where, you know, the celebrating of my birthday is strictly now for them, not for me anymore.
Well, yeah, when you get to be 65, that's what happens.
Well, I'm not that old.
AARP yet, recipient, Brian Feldman.
I'm getting there, man. I swear to you. It is crazy. You know what haunted houses and old age have in common?
No.
Noises and smells you just can't explain.
Oh. Yeah, we had a few of those in New Jersey where I grew up. Not cool.
That's what happens. But real quick, go ahead. Spence, before we go, I better say hello to you, too. What's going on? Spence, of course, working remotely from his apartment not too far from here. I won't give out the exact location. I don't even need to.
Please don't.
No, I'm not going to. But how's everything going, brother?
No, everything's great. I'm getting ready to start my third year of teaching, so I'm just a few teaching projects I have to take care of for my teaching license. But yeah, I'm getting ready to go back to teaching a bunch of 10th graders history again.
Well, that is a good thing. Spencer does teach high school, and it's a pretty cool opportunity aside from doing this and a bunch of other things. But typically when you're involved in radio in some way, shape, or form, you do something else to survive. That's just the way that it is, and that's the bottom line. Spence, go ahead. Let's jump into Nightcap, man.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Well, the puck will start in a couple of months. But, you know, Chris, one of the things when you're talking about the Vegas Golden Knights now, it's the offseason, finally a little bit of hush-hush about hockey. It seems like August is the one month where really you're done talking about it. The draft is over with. You've got the NHL awards are over with. You've got your Stanley Cup champion, and the Stanley Cup is traveling around to different places right now. And usually this is a quiet time about hockey. I have always dedicated the beginning of this show to the Vegas Golden Knights for one fact. They simply have earned it. They have come to this town in 2017. Every year except for one, they have been a playoff participant. They've been to the Stanley Cup final two times now. They've been to the conference final, was it three or four times now? I mean, this team has been nothing but a breath of sports fresh air to the Las Vegas community. It has acclimated this town and even helped part of the Western United States get more acclimated to hockey. And it's just been a really cool thing. A lot of people, Chris, are fearing the decline of the Vegas Golden Knights. They've had this tremendous run. I think we're down now to, what, three misfits left, three original misfits left. There's a couple other guys that were around that you could say were there. But realistically, from the opening day roster of 2017, there are only two Vegas Golden Knights remaining from that team, and that, of course, is William Carlson and Braden McNabb. Shea Theodore was dropped down to the AHL in Chicago at the beginning, only down there for about 2 weeks, came up, and has turned out to be one of the better two-way defensemen in the National Hockey League. But again, he wasn't on the opening day roster. A guy like Jack Whitecloud, always part of this team, but not on that opening day roster. This season lost the departure of William Carrier, Jonathan Marceau, two of the staples. Jonathan Marceau, as you've said many times, probably will be the first Vegas Golden Knight to get his number retired, leaving as the all-time goals leader, scoring leader, and of course a Conn Smythe winner in their Stanley Cup run. But when I look at this team now, Chris, I say, okay, what is it going to take for this team to maintain a playoff caliber run, and even to make a run at a potential another Stanley Cup? This team does have some key elements. I look at the forwards, Chris, and I'll just give you mine. I think it's obvious that most people would say Jack Eichel, the most valuable player on this team, one of the top 10 probably players in the National Hockey League when he's healthy and playing at his best. We have seen this guy's skill set, which is off the chart when he's at his best and when he does his thing. But I think there's other guys up front that are very key for this team making a run, and I'm just going to say him because, of course, I want your opinion. Obviously, Mark Stone hasn't had a healthy season since he's been here. We know his capability. We know his enthusiasm, his leadership unprecedented when it comes to the Vegas Golden Knights, and by far, I think the best recipient and the first guy to ever wear the C on his sweater. He was the perfect fit for that when they brought him over here. He's gigantically important. And the guy they brought in last year that I think really is a guy in the forward position or wing position that they're expecting to be an integral part of this team. And he was hurt when he first got here. But, of course, Tomas Hertl has been a staple in the NHL for a while now. I think he's going to be a tremendous addition. They should get to see him for a full season this year if he stays healthy. That, to me, is gigantic. Looking at the defense, you would think initially it'd be Alex Pietrangelo when he came over here, one of the top, most touted defensemen in the league. But we talked about Jonathan Marceau getting up there. Alex Pietrangelo's getting up there into his mid-30s now. He really tailed off a bit last year. At the end of the season, you can't blame the guy. He had appendicitis. Nobody really knew about it. Got his appendix removed and still ended up playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs and in the final. He's a big part of this team. Don't look at last year and completely judge him on that. Who knows how long that appendix problem bothered tethered him for. But now getting into his mid-30s, is he the primary guy on defense, or is it a guy like 27-year-old Noah Hanifin, who might have been one of the best acquisitions at the trading deadline they've ever picked up? This guy, I think, is a tremendous fit and a great upside and almost moves into the second-best defenseman. But then do you forget and do you sleep on a guy like Shea Theodore? My opinion, won't be here in 2025, but he is this year. We know his potential. He's also been plagued with injuries throughout his career, kind of. When he's at his best, he is as good of an offensive defenseman as there is. When he's playing his greatest, he's a decent two-way defenseman. And then also, I can't leave out of the conversation Braden McNabb, who is, when you say blue-collar athlete, his name's got to be one of the cover boys of that thing. Just a guy that plays night in and night out. You rarely see him out of the lineup and is always one of the league leaders in blocking shots. You know, Bruce Cassidy can't talk about enough of what Braden meets the Vegas Golden Knights. So you talk about those four defensemen, and then in goal, it starts and stops with Aiden Hill. Aiden Hill has to play like he did in the postseason a couple of years ago when they won the Stanley Cup final. We know this guy has world-class ability. We've seen it. A lot of people question, why was he on the bench for 4 years in the NHL in San Jose if he's that good? But we have seen his potential and his upside. I think Aiden Hill's biggest issue is consistency. If this man can be consistent, he's an upper echelon goaltender in the National Hockey League. But again, best players to me, you know, obviously Jack Eichel up front. I'll still say Alex Pietrangelo as the number one defenseman. And like I said, Aiden Hill, there's just behind him, it's a gap.
Well, there's a lot of ifs going into this, maybe more so than any other season in Golden Knights history. I'm convinced that someone that you mentioned on defense is not going to be there on opening night because you have Kaden Korzak coming up the pipe and you have Nick Hague and Zach Whitecloud, who are all three young defensemen, and you're not going to risk losing one of them because at the end of the day, you have eight defensemen who are under contract.
Yeah.
You're not going to keep two of them. You're only keeping one. So you're going to have to move either, and I'm still convinced it's Shea Theodore because I think he's the one who will get the most in return. But I don't think one of those, whether it's McNabb, Pietrangelo and Hanifin, they're not going anywhere.
Yep.
So it's either going to be McNabb or Theodore. I don't think you trade McNabb because I just don't think the value coming back is going to warrant what you lose in McNabb. I think Theodore, because you basically already acquired a guy who does everything he does in Noah Hanifin. And Hanifin's younger, and I think Hanifin's a better player. That's just me being honest about it. There's so many ifs. If Mark Stone is healthy, if Victor Olofsson and Alexander Holtz can do what the Golden Knights expect them to do. Because let's be honest, they didn't go out and hit a home run in free agency. It's not like they do that ever. Pietrangelo was the only big-time offseason free agent that they really targeted and brought in, and it worked out. They won a Stanley Cup. But there's too many question marks that will need to be answered as we head into training camp and the opening night, which I think is October 9th. Brian, I think more so than any other season in Golden Knights history, this is one where there are going to be a lot of questions, and I think there's going to be a lot of people that are holding the front office accountable because I'm a big believer in that Jonathan Marchessault is going to have a good season. You're not going to replace him this season. You didn't not sign Jonathan Marchessault because of what he's going to give you immediately. You didn't sign Jonathan Marchessault because you weren't committing 5 years to a guy who's that age. That contract may look bad in 4 or 5 years if you're the Nashville Predators, especially if you don't win a Stanley Cup. Golden Knights, I will stand behind. They made the right decision. You don't give Jonathan Marchessault a five-year deal. It's just the way it is. I'm fine with that. If he had signed a 3-year deal with Nashville, I think people rightfully would have been angry. I would have been one of them because I think that would have been bad business. But good business is not signing a guy like that to 5 years. There's going to be holes. It's just a fact. You're going to miss Jonathan Marchessault. Like, him not being here is going to be impactful. But you brought in a guy named Victor Olofsson who scored 27 goals 2 years ago playing. He's played with Jack Eichel. He knows Jack Eichel. They have a little bit of history. I think they probably could have gone out and signed someone else in free agency. Daniel Sprong signed for $100 million from the Red Wings. He signed, I think, in Seattle. Good player. Vancouver, I think, signed him.
Vancouver.
But he's a good player. Like, and he was cheap. He's produced every year that he's been in the league. You could have gone out and gotten a guy like that. But you know what? I don't question the front office.
I say it all the time.
They have proven time and time again that they know more than us.
Yep.
They know more than the fans.
Yep.
And they know more than pretty much every other front office in the entire league.
They're up there. That's for damn sure.
So they know what they're doing. And the minute they don't know what they're doing, I'm imagining Bill Foley will hold them accountable. Give them the confidence that they deserve, right? You need to have faith in them.
Well,
that,
if anybody deserves the benefit of the doubt, it's George
anybody.
Kelly McQuinn.
We can sit here and nitpick, but at the end of the day, those guys have earned the right to have confidence and faith from the fan base.
No, I agree. You know, I want to ask Jake real quickly a question with the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, you were here for most of the beginning of the stuff, not on the show, but you were in Vegas, moved out to Austin a couple of years ago. They've got a pretty good team down the road from Austin in Dallas and the Dallas Stars. What do people think outside of Las Vegas? Because I know what they think of in Detroit, and I've talked about it before on the show. It's a respect factor. They are the fans in Detroit respect the Vegas Golden Knights for coming here and being this successful early. What do people say in other states? Like, what do people say in Texas about this team?
So, of course, being in Texas and when that series was going down, there was a bit of fear. As from what I can say, based on, I mean, I have a bunch of friends that are Dallas Cowboy fans, so ultimately they're Dallas Stars fans because they're from Dallas. And it's a respect factor, but more slight fear because they know that the Golden Knights have almost a chip on their shoulder pretty much all the time, and fear comes with respect. So I think that during that playoff series, it was definitely a little bit did they have – I think they had – the Stars kind of had our number during the regular season, and then the script got flipped in the playoffs. Is that, am I correct there?
Yeah, the Stars have played well against the Vegas Golden Knights.
That's what
I
thought.
This past year, yeah. And then yeah, you're right.
But also, guys, don't you think that this sustainability of keeping a team good for this long is already pretty impressive? Because, I mean, I know we do have a decent amount of talent on this team as of now, but keeping up and the cycles of teams consistently throughout the years, I feel the Golden – I mean, you guys just praised the front office already, and I am kind of agreeing with you guys that it's impressive to see that the Golden Knights have sustained a solid roster and turnover kind of year after year since they came into the league, and it's developed a lot of respect. And you're starting to see teams that were not as good get into their peak of the – their goodness, I guess. And I feel like there's got to be a time where the Knights kind of take a slight dip. So maybe this could be the year. But at the same time, I think that they have a long-term plan that's going to pan out to keep this team above average for more than just this year and the next year.
Well, the thing is with the Golden Knights, Jake, is, as we talked about, Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee, two of the greatest masterminds, I think, in hockey today. George McPhee, of course, worked with Herbie Brooks on the 1980 Miracle on Ice team. He was part of that. This guy, part of building the New York Islanders. This guy is absolutely just a genius. And then Kelly McCrimmon really fits into his mold. And that you just can't question what they do. This team, these guys find a way. I don't know if anyone's utilized the trading deadline or free agency better than the Vegas Golden Knights front office. So I don't question them because I said I'm not qualified to as much as I know about hockey. But I like what they have here. It could be a dip. To me, the key is going to be, there's without question, it's going to be the play of Aiden Hill on the back end. How good can he be? And this team staying healthy. Guys, Mark Stone, Jack Eichel, Alex Pietrangelo, these guys have got to stay healthy and give us a lot of minutes. A guy like Jack Eichel has the potential to be a 50-goal scorer in the National Hockey League. He has exceptional skills. He's just got to be able to play 75-plus games a season.
Right.
And if he can do that, he is one of the top, in my opinion, one of the top five players in the entire league, and we've seen that type of ability. I'm predicting the Vegas Golden Knights make the playoffs again in 2024-25. I don't think I'm being a homer. I think we're going to see this team stay healthier than we have in the past, and I just think they're going to make a run. I think they're going to get down and dirty. I think Aiden Hill's going to play better than even I expect him to, and I think we'll see them make at least another run of the playoffs. Stanley Cup, it's a crapshoot. It all depends on how well everyone plays, how healthy they stay, and then, of course, the moves the Vegas Golden Knights make from here until the end of the season. Let's move on, man, talking about the Olympics. The Olympics got started. I'm wearing my my USA hat, I guess. It's my Oakley hat, but it's got the stars and stripes up front and the Oakley symbol. Hey, guys, it's cool. I love the Olympics. It's funny because the one thing about the Olympics is I watch more sports and sports I would never watch. I mean, I get stuck every now and again watching badminton, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, who watches badminton? But it's the Olympics. It's for a gold medal. And you might turn it on, and all of a sudden, man, I'm stuck for a few minutes. I, you know, no offense to gymnastics. They are unbelievable athletes. But I never, ever watch gymnastics except during the Olympics. You know, it's like in the wintertime. You know, I'm a hockey fan. I love skating and stuff. But I'm not a big figure skating fan. It's incredible what those guys and gals can do. But again, the only time I really watch them is during the Olympics. This is a time where everything comes into play. Rowing, for God's sakes.
Water polo is insane.
Well, water polo is a cool sport. Like, rowing, though. Who would ever sit and watch a crew row a boat?
Right.
And yet, yeah. Next thing I know, I'm watching the four-man, the two-man, and I'm like, what the hell is wrong with me? But you know what? It's the Olympics. That's all I can say. There's something magical about the Olympics, be it Summer Olympics, be it Winter Olympics. There's something magical about it. And it's why you see the top athletes in the world in their respective sports, now that they allow professional athletes to compete in the Olympics, which they've done for a few decades now, now it really plays, and you're really seeing the true best athletes in the world represent their countries. And to me, it's really, really cool.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned badminton, because that is one of the five sports the U.S. has never won a medal of any kind.
Never.
The others are table tennis.
Table tennis is right there, too.
Because I lived in Asia. That sport is dominated by China, Taiwan, and Japan.
In Asia, when you're born, they get you for your birth gift. When they come to your table tennis rackets.
Yeah, you're not getting.
That's what you get when you're born. They give it to an infant.
Yeah, you don't get Jordans on your first birthday. You get, like, the little tennis table tennis paddle. Yeah. But rhythm and gymnastics, which is that's one I've watched, and I don't know why. And trampoline, which is like another gymnastics-type sport. The final one is actually one of my favorite sports to watch during the Olympics, and it's handball. I don't know how we suck at that. Like, you watch that sport, and you figure that the U.S. would be good at it. I don't know how field hockey's not on this list. Maybe the women have won some type of medal in field hockey, like, back in, like, the 60s. But, like, I think handball, how the U.S. is not good is mind-blowing, because we have so many athletes who play college sports that don't go pro. And all you'd have to do is find some of our really good college basketball players that aren't good enough to play overseas or in the NBA and teach them to play this game. Like, I watched Germany and Sweden yesterday, and then I watched France and Denmark. I was supposed to go to handball in the Tokyo Olympics. Thanks a lot, COVID. But, like, it's such a cool sport, and I don't know how. Now, we automatically qualify in 2028. So, you know, maybe in 2028 we'll find a way to get a team and get on the podium there.
So I just want to know how you guys feel about this, but next Olympics, they're going to be bringing in flag football.
Yeah.
What do you guys think that's going to be a good addition, or do you guys think it'll be
rugby sevens has been awesome.
Well,
like, I watched that the other day.
It sucks that you can't have American football. It just doesn't make sense. Not enough countries play at the equipment and stuff like that. Flag football is something actually other countries can get into.
Oh, yeah.
And now I hate the fact that the Pro Bowl is flag football. But the point is, now that it is, it kind of shines a light brighter on flag football itself that is an endorsement for the sport. And you're seeing more of it now. Like everything else on TV, ESPN holds a flag football national world championships. So it's gotten bigger, and I think it will get other countries more into American football by having flag football. I think it's going to be interesting. And, man, how cool, because you've got some guys out there that couldn't play maybe NFL football or contact football, but they're tremendously skilled, and flag football may be a sport they could participate in. So I think it's kind of cool, actually.
What'll be cool about that is all these countries that have athletes who have, like, maybe, like, they're from the Caribbean or they're from Africa, and you know, there's a lot of guys with Nigerian names in the NFL. So you imagine, like, that these countries, they're going to be able to, like, baseball years ago when they would, like, Greece.
Yep.
like they didn't have any pro baseball players in Greece, but they would find they found players in the United States who were of Greek descent. So I imagine like countries like Jamaica will find players who are of Jamaican descent, and you know, some of Ghana and Nigeria, they'll find players who are of their descent, and they'll be able to recruit them to play and represent. Listen, I don't know about you, but for me, it would have been incredible to, I think every person who was an athlete as a kid had dreams of it someday being an Olympian.
Oh yeah.
Like, I don't care what sport you played. Like, you wanted to be an Olympian. Like, I was a runner, so I don't look like it now, but you know, I was good. And I was like, the funny thing is my times were better than some of these guys who finished like dead last in the Olympics. I'm like, man, if only I had been born in like,
or if you could get a dual citizenship or something. Cause I'll tell you right now, with flag football,
that's what they're going to do.
I don't know that I could have made the U.S.'s flag football team, but I loved it and I was pretty good at it. But I'll bet if I could like be a dual citizen with Israel, I probably could have starred on their flag football team.
You know that's the thing. You probably could, right?
Right, and that's what I'm
quarterback
saying.
And wide receiver, you know, at the same time,
something like that. I mean, you know, but I like the advent of these new sports. As time change and things change, you know, you get things like, you know, skateboarding. You look at how gigantic that is internationally now. The BMX bikes. I like the opportunity. X Games was really cool, but I think incorporating some of these sports into the Olympic Games is fair and just now, based on the fact that that's what we've morphed into as a civilization. We've changed, and some of the sports and things we do now have grown. They've materialized into other things, and why not bring them into the Olympics when they come to the forefront and they're getting a lot of notoriety? I like it. Real quickly, I wanted to just say, of course, the biggest sports we look at here in the United States when it comes to the Olympics, we look at our team sports. Like in the Winter Olympics, I think hockey is a big one for all of us, as basketball is in the Summer Olympics. And of course, the men's basketball team going for their fifth consecutive gold medal. It's going to be tough this year. And their first game, which is at 11 o'clock or 11:15 this morning, is going to be real tough because Serbia, even though they blew them out in Dubai, do not make that game the benchmark for what you think is going to happen. This Serbian team has seven guys that are current or former NBA players, and one of them being the Joker. And I'll tell you what, my Nikolaj Djokovic, man, you're talking about Djokovic is one of the greatest players of all time, and he's going to be in that discussion when he retires. He didn't play well in the game in Serbia against the United States. I look for him to play much better this morning. If the United States doesn't really get their crap together and really take this seriously, Serbia will beat them. I'm telling you straight up, they will beat them. And the women are going for their eighth consecutive gold medal. Pretty cool. They're 2,000-1 favorites. You know, if you put that in percentages, that gives them a 95% chance to win the gold medal. That's pretty damn impressive if you ask me. But, you know, the thing is, you know, this team, and we'll kind of morph into Aces up. The Aces, 8-2 in their last 10 games before the All-Star break. And then of course, the Olympic break, which is a month long. But this team at the better than the halfway mark, a little bit ahead of that, is playing really, really well. And that is because, you know, guys, one thing I've got to say, love the NBA, hate it, whatever. Asia Wilson of the Las Vegas Aces, at this point in the season, no WNBA player has ever had her statistics. She is having the best season, at least at the halfway point, of any player in history. Right now, she is on pace to average 25 points and 10 rebounds a game. That is unbelievable statistically in any sport, at any basketball level. She is literally, I'm going to say, no longer and never really was carrying the WNBA. But when you talk about Caitlin Clark, the other women, Breanna Stewart, other women they talk about, the conversation right now when you talk about the WNBA and its best player, its shining player, is 100% Asia Wilson. Do not take that away from her. She could win her second straight gold medal, and she could win her third WNBA championship in the same year. Pretty damn impressive results, and she's as good as it gets.
And won't this be her third MVP award if she... I'm pretty sure this will be her third MVP award.
She could get her third consecutive WNBA MVP award. And right now, there's nobody
That's
even
insane.
Close, in my opinion, to get it. I love what Caitlin Clark has done. Do not take away. You know, she came into the WNBA as, you know, a villain to the players only because of how much attention she was getting. She signs that big $20+ million contract, endorsement contract with Nike.
Good
but
for
you
her.
Know what? You know what she has done as far as assists go? Look at her assist total. No rookie has ever done what she's doing with assists. She's breaking everyone's record. When she's said and done, she could break Diana Taurasi's record. I mean, this woman is unbelievable. And yet she came into the league as a woman that was known for her perimeter game, for the ability to shoot the ball from the rafters. People did not take into account how good she is as a distributor. And when I watch her, I'll tell you what, one thing she does do, you look at elite men distributors and you say, you know, we talk about the difference, you know, just because we're anatomically different. She is an elite distributor and could be even as a man. I mean, some of her assists are incredible.
Well, when you watch her, too, you see the growth in her game. Like, to me, that's the most impressive aspect. And, you know, I think there's going to be some rocky roads, but the Indiana Fever look to have turned a corner. Like, I bet them to win over 14.5 games at the beginning of the season. It's looking pretty good right now. I think they're up to 10 or 11 wins, and they still have a whole second half of the season to go. But you look at the growth in Caitlin Clark's game, and you look at the Aaliyah Boston, who is a tremendous player as well. That team's not that far away.
No. Well, you know, they've been the benefactor of getting a first-round draft pick 2 years in a row.
Well, and that's how the Aces were able to, you know, they had...
any sport, Chris, that's a big thing. But in basketball, where only five people are on the floor at one time, you get two first-round picks in back-to-back years, that completely changes the face of your franchise.
It's massive in the WNBA when you only have 12 teams.
Exactly.
You know, and you have generational players like... I'll put Asia Wilson in there. She's a generational talent,
question,
you know.
And
I think Caitlin Clark, you look at her and... I mean, I think the day will come that she's going to be the best player in the WNBA. I mean, she's already not that far away. I don't think she's in the top 10, 15 yet, but you could see she's really not that far.
The only reason she was not on the Olympic team was to avoid distraction.
I don't believe that. No, because I'm a believer that you don't leave Chelsea Gray off that team. And then the people making the comments about Brittany Griner, stupid. They play different positions.
No, they do. And Brittany Griner is a force on the inside. You need someone like that. You need a space heater on the inside.
But you know what? Caitlin Clark is going to have the next four or five Olympics.
Oh,
I mean,
no question about it.
She's going to have a 16-20-year career.
No question about it. As time goes on, her assist and scoring is going to be completely off the chart. And the one thing that she doesn't get the credit she deserves for, I'm not going to say an elite WNBA defender, but she is solid two-way player. She can defend as well. And I think she will only get better, and it's because of the heart the woman has inside her. Listen, we got to take a real quick break. We're going to be back on the other side with Fact This, and I don't think you want to miss this one. It's pretty cool, and it's local.
Fact This. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact This.
Fact This is brought to you by LifeLake Hair Center of Las Vegas. If you are experiencing hair loss or thinning hair and want to learn about the best non-surgical options available, call 702-737-5759 or go to LifeLakeHair.com and schedule your free consultation today. It is a fact! Las Vegas native Bryce Harper hit his 24th home run of the season yesterday in an 8-0 thumping of the Cleveland baseball team. All right, the Cleveland Guardians. I hate saying that. This was Harper's 100th home run at Citizens Bank Park, making him only the 13th player in Major League Baseball history to hit 100 home runs at multiple baseball stadiums. Six of the previous dozen players are in the Hall of Fame right now. I just got to take hats off to this guy. You know, it was funny, back when both Mike Trout and Bryce Harper first came out, everyone started to think, wow, Mike Trout's the better player. Bryce Harper, you know, he had all this hype, basically playing college baseball at CSN when he should have been a senior in high school, playing in the bigs in his teens. You know, he was supposed to be the guy. Then Mike Trout comes out. Bryce gets hurt a little bit here and there. Mike Trout breaks out of the gate quickly. The last couple of years, how many people have even heard about Mike Trout? Is he in the All-Star game? He's hurt. He's always hurt. Bryce Harper has elevated himself to a multiple-time National League MVP now. With his second baseball team, 100 home runs in a new ballpark, and he's only been there a few years. I mean, this guy is as good as it gets. And when you talk about the best players in the game today, Bryce Harper, I mean, he's got to be top three, top five, no lower than that. I mean, Jake, this guy is as good as it gets. We have followed him through his career in Las Vegas on to the Washington Nationals, now to the Philadelphia Phillies. It's really cool to see his success. But I'll tell you what, I thought he was going to be really good and one of the best players. He's exceeded he's exceeded my expectations.
You know, Dad, I'm sure you – I mean, obviously you know, but Mike Trout just left his rehab assignment with a knee soreness. Yep. And that back injury he sustained a couple years ago, or maybe it was last year.
No, 2 years ago, but it's changed him completely.
Oh, yeah. It's I mean, from what I heard, doctors said that he eventually, if he doesn't relax a little bit, then he could potentially lose the ability to use his legs. And that's I heard doctors were recommending him to retire, and – it's a shame because, I mean, just having some generational talent like that, being plagued by injuries. But definitely Bryce Harper, it's actually really cool because when I was growing up playing ball, Bryce Harper was, you know, like a national icon. He went to JUCO early at like 16 and was just hitting 500-plus foot homers. It's love to see it. Love to see it from Vegas.
It's extremely cool. And Jake, Spencer, Mags, I'll let you all answer this question if you can. I said Bryce Harper hit his 100th home run at Citizens Bank Stadium. He was the third player to hit 100 home runs in that stadium. Can you name both or either one of the other two?
I'm going to guess Ryan Howard.
Very good. That was my guess. Okay.
And Chase Utley.
Wow. That we can't even go on anymore. I didn't get Chase Utley. I got Ryan Howard, but Chase Utley, good
well,
guess.
To be fair, I know a lot of Philadelphia Philly fans growing up where okay. I did, so
let someone else guess.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny. I actually grew up a big Mike Schmidt fan who did not hit any home runs at Citizens Bank Park, but he hit a lot of home runs at the old Veterans Stadium.
Big time at Veterans Stadium, one of the worst stadiums ever constructed, in my opinion.
I can tell you some stuff about that place.
Football players, I mean, every player cumulatively when it used to be there. You know, I Detroit Lions players. I remember talking to Barry Sanders after like his first game ever at Veterans Stadium, and he's like, "It's the worst field I ever played on in my life." He said, to, and it wasn't my question, but to somebody else in that interview, like three of us talking to Barry, he said to one of the other guys, he'd have rather played the game in sneakers on cement.
That's
how bad that stadium
is. One of my favorite aspects about Veterans Stadium is Lenny Dykstra, who turned out to be not such a good human being, but a guy who I rooted for as a New York Met fan and a guy I liked when he played for the Phillies. They called him Nails because he was hard as nails.
I always thought he was like a poor man's Pete Rose, just not nearly as good, but his hustle and his element reminded me.
There was a – because he played center field for the Phillies, number four. Yep. There was a massive black spot in center field where he played from all the tobacco he would spit out during a game. It basically looked like an oil stain on the street. Like, that's how bad it was. And I actually saw Terry Mulholland pitch a no-hitter at Veterans Stadium. We used to go to a lot of Philadelphia. My uncle was a big shot with one of the big oil companies in Philadelphia, and so he would always get us like box seats, and so we would go to a ton of I've been to more Philadelphia Philly games than I've been to Met games at Shea and Citi Field. So I grew up. I should have been a Phillies fan because I went to so many games, but I couldn't follow. I had to follow my grandmother into being a Mets fan.
I would have been a Mets fan before any kind of Philadelphia fan was.
I like Philadelphia.
I never disliked them, but the playoff game, it was 94, 95. It was the same. It was the end of the run of the team that went to the NFC Championship game in 91, the only playoff game that Lions won before last season. and I'll never forget the game. Rodney Peete was now the quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Lions went there playing pretty good ball, and a lot of people. It was a very tight game. I think it was only like a 2-point line in favor of the Eagles. And Barry Sanders had his worst rushing output of his career, minus 2 yards in that game. And I say, and Barry said after the game, he thought that they put fertilizer or something on the field. He could not get his footing. And yet the Eagles seemed to be running fine. It's almost like they put something on the field that the Lions couldn't figure out because they're all sticking. And a Lions player, it looked like they were playing on ice. And Sanders said something was really funky about that field. And ever since then, I'm like, you had to cheat to beat us, Philadelphia.
Yeah,
stop it.
That was, so, I don't Barry think that Sanders, was Buddy Ryan. He was
Barry
gone by
Sanders
then.
Barry Sanders does not rush for minus 2 yards in any game. In a swimming pool, he'd rush for more than minus two yards.
That was that was either Ray Rhodes or I can't imagine Rich Kotite won a playoff game.
I don't remember who was the coach of the Eagles. I'm not going to lie and say that I do. I just remember watching that game and thinking, this is ridiculous. Every guy in the field has slipped at least five times, and somehow the Eagles are having no problem running the
ball. They had longer cleats. Yeah, although I don't know if you wanted...
The Lions change. A lot of them change cleats, and I thought it did no good.
The worst, by the way, one of the worst football injuries, and we won't bring up someone asking Napoleon McCallum,
oh my God,
30 minutes after it was already a done subject about tearing up his knee, but I think it was Tom Waddell who played for the Chicago Bears, and he jumped up to catch a pass, and his body went up, but his feet and ankles stayed in the turf, and his kneecaps, both of them, ended up in his thighs.
Oh, my God.
It was one of the worst, and I think it was Sports Illustrated had a picture of it.
Oh, my God.
As it was happening.
The sound of that.
Like, it was one of the worst. It was awful.
It doesn't
like,
surprise me that it happened at the vet.
Well, and that was the thing. I have to find the picture now because I'm pretty sure it was Tom Waddell. And he was.
I'll squint, but look.
Oh,
at it
was awful.
Oh, yeah,
I'm not going to look at that.
No, I want to say. Listen, moving on real quickly. I wanted to get into the bones and talk about the Raiders but Spencer, I know you've got some stuff to tell us about camp, and I want to talk about that. But before that, a couple of quarterbacks in the National Football League, we've been waiting for them to get contract extensions. They did. One still hasn't. Two have, and the two that have, Jordan Love most recently, he practiced with the Packers after signing a four-year, $220 million contract.
By the way, real quick, it was Wendell Davis,
okay,
not Tom Waddell.
Wendell Davis. Oh, I think I remember that, Chris. Well, we'll have to get that picture and get it up for you maybe next week. But his contract extension, he gets $155 million in new full guarantees, $75 million signing bonus. And look at it this way. Jordan Love, I like him a lot. He's only started 18 games in his career. Half of them were good games. Half of them weren't. But the bottom line is, in his final eight games last season, 18 touchdowns against one interception, about 70% completion rating. The bottom line is, this kid can play. My expectations, I think he'll be able to play well under the pressure. Now, he has job security. I think he's going to play well, but he's got great physical ability. He seemed to make the other young guys around him last year better. And I actually think I've been arguing with people on this, but based on what I saw the second half of last season, he is an ascending player, and I think the Packers are a better team than they were last year. And last year, they were seconds away from going to the NFC Championship game against the Detroit Lions when San Francisco came back and beat them. Jordan Love, I think, is solid. One that's a little bit head-scratching to me, Tua. To his contract, four-year extension, $212.4 million. The bottom line is $93.2 million fully guaranteed. That's a little bit low compared to the guarantees that some others are getting. As you just heard, Jordan Love's getting $155 million guaranteed. About 44% of the entire contract is guaranteed. That's it. But Tua is secure now. And the thing is, the Dolphins gave themselves a little bit of an out. He's secure, but they can get rid of him after 2 years, and it would still work out and help them out with the salary cap if he doesn't pan out or he continues to be an injury problem. The big head scratcher right now, and before we go into that, Jordan Love was asked about whether or not, how he's going to handle this pressure, and I thought his answer was pretty good.
There's always pressure, and I think that's, part of the job that we sign up for. You got to find ways to deal with that pressure and handle as best you can to be the best player you can be every day. This place alone, being the Green Bay Packers quarterback and all the great QB play that's been here for the however long it's been, there's definitely a responsibility and a certain play style and a certain leadership style that you got to have to be here. And it's something that I'm focused on earning every day and going out and putting my best foot forward for them, for the team, for organization, and everybody. Like I said, chasing that goal of winning a Super Bowl.
Hey, you know what? He's followed up Aaron Rodgers well. I don't think people expected a lot of him. He kind of quietly, because Aaron Rodgers hung around for a few years after they drafted him. This kid's a real deal. The athleticism is really good. He's confident. And again, look at his body of work in the last eight games into the postseason last year. He did a great job. I like the upside to him. Dak Prescott's entering the final year of his four-year, $160 million contract that he signed in 2021. $55 million salary cap value, was the second highest in the NFL. He led the NFL this past season with 36 touchdowns, a 72.7 total QBR rating, and that was second in the NFL last season. Dak and his agent has won every time since he's been a Cowboy when it comes to free agency, and I think he's going to win again. He referenced earlier in the week that all the great quarterbacks in NFL history have left the team they made their name with, you know, they made their name with, to go to another team. You know, people like Brady, Manning, Favre, Rodgers, Joe Montana. This is all of the QBs. Every one of them have won a Super Bowl. How is he saying the best QBs? Number one, Dak, you've been a pretty decent regular season QB. There's no question you got good skills. Why would you say the best QBs in history have left and gone to other teams? You're considering yourself one of the best QBs in history? Are you kidding me? You've won one playoff game, dude. I think you'll succeed. Jerry Jones is talking about paying you again. You'll get your contract, but please don't put yourself in and reference the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. You're not even close, my friend. Not anywhere close. Leave it alone. Bad subject. He's going to get his contract. Like I said, he'll win again. Him and his agent have done great manipulating and negotiating with Jerry Jones. Spence, talk to me about the Raiders. What's going on? We don't have much time left, but I want in a minute or two, tell me what's happening at camp. What do you expect? And how is that race between quarterbacks, man? I mean, O'Connell last year, you know, got the job at the end of the season, didn't do great. They put in Jarrett Stidham at the end of the season. But it's O'Connell or Gardner Minshew. We all think it's going to be Minshew. What do you think about that and anything else going on at Raider camp that we should know about?
Yeah, just from what I've read on the reports, and shout out to Mike Dixon, actually, a friend of the show. He is doing a lot of great coverage out there.
Yes, he is.
So getting a lot of footage from him. So he does a great job. But in terms of the QB competition, I think what it seems, at least, is that no one's really sticking out. Just from the reports, I've heard that red zone offense for the Raiders has been really good, which makes sense. They got Brock Bowers, so it's kind of seems impossible to cover them in the red zone. When you combine everything, you got two monster tight ends, you got one of the best receivers in football, you got one of the best second receivers in football in Jacoby Myers, so plenty of options. But I have heard that they have struggled to move the ball down the field like in a regular fashion to get to the red zone, which I think you'll see for a while now, especially as Gardner Minshew starts to get in and figure things out. And I also think it speaks to the level of the defense for the Raiders. I think we have one of the best defenses we've had since maybe Richard Seymour was on the defensive line for the Raiders when I was a kid. And that was a long time ago.
Well, you know, I think my grandson recently got his haircut into like the Fu Manchu, and I'm wondering if not that's a mustache. What is it? The what's it called?
A mullet.
And I'm wondering if we're going to start morphing him into looking a little bit more like Gardner Minshew. I still say Raiders upside maximum to me 9 wins if everything goes perfectly well for him. I think they're going to win more like 7 or 8 games, which isn't terrible. Real quickly, the Las Vegas Aviators finally back in town on Tuesday. Albuquerque will be here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Check them out. 7:05 starts each night. Nothing like a night at the Las Vegas ballpark. Hey, we're out of time. I want to thank my son for coming in studio. Jake, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Hopefully more to come.
More to come. I want to thank, of course, Chris Magnum Chapman behind the wheels of steel. Wouldn't know what to do without him. And at home, pushing all the buttons, making things work is our social media director, Spencer the Wiz Ostrowski. Always appreciate him. I'm Brian Feldman. This is Out of Line. Every Sunday, 8 to 9, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas. We're here. You be as well. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.